Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Ellipsis. Yes, Ellipsis, not to be confused with ellipse, which I believe is an oval, if my year 7 maths serves me correctly. My name is Ella Morton. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Ella Morton. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Ella Morton or YouTube at, wanna guess? Yep. YouTube.com/Ella Morton. Hi. If I've not encountered you before, then welcome. If you know me, then you probably have an inkling as to what this podcast is going to be all about. If you have read my blog, sprinkleofginger.com, you will have noticed some common themes emerging, things like creativity, inspiration, being a little bit crazy, trying to find a way out of that, and basically just trying to make your way in a world that sometimes doesn't make sense and can be frustrating. So I'm going to be covering an eclectic range of topics. I'm going to be having special guests on, ideally a different person every week. And I'm going to draw from my friends, people I know, people I've encountered in New York who are creative, driven, maybe a little bit crazy like me, but all of them will have something very interesting to say, and we'll be able to give advice and speak about their experiences being amazing people with problems, just like everybody else. So without further ado, I would like to begin the first ever episode. Oh, this is so exciting. This is a doozy, folks. My first guest is Mimi Molly, formerly of Rocket Boom. We started working there at about the same time. She was the main host there for about 2 years. She's now working at My Damn Channel, where she is not on camera, in fact, much to the consternation of many. She is working in talent development behind the scenes. So without further ado, here is my interview with Mimi Molly. I hope you enjoy it. I am sitting next to Mimi Molly.
Hi!
You may remember her from such shows as Rocket Boom in the good old days, and YouTube in the even better old days. And what are you doing now?
I work for My Damn Channel, and my official title is Director of Talent and Audience Development. So I do a lot of things. I manage our YouTube relationship day-to-day, all of our channels, stuff like metadata, telling people how to optimize their thumbnails, figuring out cross-promotion, any appearances people, like our talent, can make. I'm also working on something called the My Damn Channel Vlog Network. So I'm hiring existing video bloggers to create new shows with us as part of a partnership, and it's going really nicely so far.
That sounds super fancy.
Thanks. That sounds, I know, really, I'm a director. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, what's up with that? Like, I would have thought that you would have to be
I'm an executive.
Yeah, well, this is exhibiting really old school gender values and stuff, but I would have thought that to be a highfalutin executive, you'd have to be like a 50-year-old guy in a suit.
Yeah, but we don't have a lot of those in the internet.
Yeah, so that's weird to me, because, like, it's something I'm noticing working, especially in internet stuff. Like, I remember when I came to America and I was really paranoid because I don't have a degree. And I was thinking, everyone was telling me that's going to be a real problem.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get into the workplace and, you know, people see on your resume that you didn't finish college. And, I mean, it's been fine so far, because it seems like every workplace I go into is full of 20-somethings who grew up with the internet, and that's like their main qualification.
Yeah. I didn't graduate college either. I went for 1 year to a fine art school.
High five, dropout.
Super qualified for absolutely nothing. but because I was doing all this stuff on the internet when I was like 16, I got seen by Rocket Boom, and I was able to become the host, and I learned so much from being there that it made people think I was qualified to do a job like this. And I think that experience is so much more valuable than any education could have been.
For real. I got so sick of sitting in crowded tutorial rooms learning about Foucault and just that theoretical stuff. Like, it really, I just wanted to do something real.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, like, I applied to universities in London a couple of times. I applied to Goldsmiths to do media and communications, like, every year that I thought I might go to uni in London, which was, like, 1 year when I went to uni in Canada and 1 year when I moved to Rocket Boom and got a job. And I think about now, like, if I'd gone to a media and communications course, how funny that would have been.
Wow.
I would be talking so much bullshit. I right.
You'd use words like synergy.
I would. I would use synergy all the time. Not that I don't use it all the time anyway, ironically.
Yes, ironically. So, okay, you started making YouTube videos when you were...
I was 16.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I can only, like, I mean, YouTube, I am a bit older than you.
Only a little bit.
Well, I'm 47. I'm not 47. I'm in my 20s still.
She's pretty.
But if YouTube were around when I was 16, I think I would have become insufferable. Because yeah. When I was about 17 or 18, it was like the era of LiveJournal.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember there were all these communities on LiveJournal that were like for pretty people. Mm-hmm. And they were called like non-uglies.
Oh, my God.
And to get accepted into their little realm, you had to submit photos of yourself.
I remember this.
Yeah,
I remember
and people
having
would
to
judge you.
Your application to join a yeah. LiveJournal group.
And so, I was like 18, and I remember looking at these groups and feeling like simultaneously just feeling revulsion, but also like a desperate desire to be accepted by mm-hmm. them. And I think if YouTube was around, I would have channeled that sort of desperate desire for
right.
attention and validation toward that. I think it would have been very bad for me.
That's really interesting.
So how did you not become a monster?
It's interesting that you brought up LiveJournal because that's how I got into YouTube. I had a LiveJournal when I was like 13 and I would write about what my friends and I did at the weekend with photos and captions, and I would work really hard on it. When I got home at Saturday at 7 p.m. after being out all day, I'd be like, and we did all this crazy stuff. And then I found out about audio posts on LiveJournal and I was like, that's the coolest yeah. thing ever. And we couldn't do it in England. So I was like, oh, how am I ever going to be able to like get my voice on the internet really? And then I found YouTube, people like Brookers and The Hill 88 and Community Channel, like we talk about all the time. And I thought they were so cool. And I thought like, this makes perfect sense. I'll just translate my LiveJournal posts into YouTube posts. And then I can be part of this community and be friends with all these people. What am I talking about? Being 16 on the internet. That's what I was supposed to be talking about.
But do you think because this is before social media really yeah. happened.
Yeah.
Do you think that desire to share, I mean, was it part of you being a teenager and like wanting a bit of attention?
Totally.
So when you, I mean, what was your, why did you start making videos?
I started making videos partly like because I was kind of enamored with the whole YouTube community and the idea that you could rise above the normal and like become someone that people wanted to know. And that when you got to that level, you could be part of this like inside group that was there really early on. And it was just cool people that I wanted to talk to. I really joined YouTube because of the community and because of the communication between those people who were important at that time.
So
where do we want to finish that?
When you first started posting videos, do you yeah. remember how you felt when you got your first comments?
I was so excited. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. People are actually commenting on my stuff and it's instant and I can respond to them. And I mean, when you're early on YouTube, all the comments are pretty positive unless you're making yeah. something absolutely terrible, like dragging a cat downstairs. Like people are going to say something nice about you because they wouldn't say anything if they didn't care mm-hmm. at that stage.
But then like how, because you have I don't know how many subscribers you have, but it's a lot.
Yeah, there's a few.
So at what point did it start to become, you know how YouTube is, it's sort of, now in the comments you get kind of, there's a tipping point at which it stops being like all positive and all your yeah. fans and you can reply to them and then it just turns into
right.
show us your tits.
Yeah.
So I mean, when was that tipping point?
It was the first time I got featured on the front page of YouTube.
Ah, okay.
And a lot of people came in who weren't from this like inner circle of completely understanding what us vloggers were doing. Mm-hmm. And just people who came to watch like funny cat videos or videos of people solving Rubik's cubes. They really didn't care about what we were doing and were just like, hot, not hot. What the fuck is this? Why am I watching this? And stuff like that. It was just something no one knew about. So
it's interesting because I didn't use YouTube until like 2009 or 2008.
Right.
And so I came in after that initial, after that, there was that smaller community of vloggers.
Yeah.
And when I started watching vlogs, I was like, why did people watch this? Like
yeah.
I just reacted really strongly against it because I felt like, what's the point of this? But then I think because I missed that initial community feeling,
yeah.
it was just lost on me. And I wonder if that's what happened when there was that influx of people.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if people think that now. Whenever I talk about like liking vloggers or thinking that someone... I don't know if I want to give examples. I mean, Shane Dawson is a great example to give when we talk about outrageous vloggers because he knows he's outrageous. So when some people find that, they're like, what is this shit? But I can completely appreciate what Shane Dawson does and how hard he's worked and his audience and like why that works and all of the thought he puts into it. But it's, yeah, it's not why I signed up for the site. So I'm interested in like, what was the first vlog you watched where you were like, oh, this is something that might be worth, you know, doing or paying attention to?
Oh, it's weird because I remember, I can't remember when it was, but I remember seeing Brooke's video where she lip synced to that song from Chicago.
Oh yeah, that was like so
the
good.
Pop six.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? Like I thought she was really good at it and it was funny. But, like, the low production values, and it was just her sitting in her bedroom. Yeah. And, like, I was like, what is... I don't understand why this exists. Like, yeah. I think it's good and I like it, but I don't understand the motivation behind it. And I don't know. I think maybe because it tapped into things I don't like about myself, like a desire for attention or that sort of thing. I think I saw that in vlogs and I was like, oh, that's really vain. And that's objectionable because I think it was like a defensive, I'm not like that type thing.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know.
And now here I am vlogging.
Oh, it's really fun. And it's a fun environment to be in, especially when you can get positive attention for what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think the Brooker's like lip syncing example I think that's the same experience I had early on getting interested in this community, because the first YouTube video I ever saw was Smosh and their Pokemon theme song lip sync. And I saw it in like 2005 and sent it to all my friends on MySpace. I was like, this is it. This is like what I want to do. I need a video camera now. And then I found people like Brooke, and then, you know, down the rabbit hole we went.
Yeah. Well, when you post a video now, I mean, you get so many comments that are just like, I want to punch, virtually punch. Let's not take that as
not use the R word.
A threat of violence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, cops. but it just like, I don't know how you deal with that. That would, I mean, I get negative comments, especially when I was doing Rockabim videos.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would not want to make videos if that's what I had to deal with. Do you even look at the comments now?
I do look at them and, I don't respond so often, but my whole attitude towards it was never to reward anything negative ever.
Right.
Never to even address that it was happening. And I still believe this, and I believe this with every channel I now manage and every company I've worked for in the past and anything I've done on the internet. Like, I don't understand why I would respond to a troll or a hater or whatever you want to call it, because I'm curating the response I want, and there are still good replies within the shit, and I just reward those, and that kind of teaches people how to react. Like, you don't want to provoke someone further who's already being negative towards you, so why not reward the positive things and see people that...
See, I'm going on this crusade. I think it's ill-advised, but this happened the other day when I posted a video about, oh, I think it was about throwing up. I don't know.
Did it call a yawning?
Yeah, that was a bad weekend. But someone posted this comment that was just like, what's happened to your hair? And I said, oh, right. I changed it. And he's like, you need to change it back to red.
Yeah.
And yeah, this just sort of went
on.
Of course
you do. You're Ella Morton, the redhead.
But then I said, I wrote this long comic because I was like, I'm going to try empathy. This is going to be my strategy, and I'm going to make him realize that I'm human and that he's going to feel bad.
Yeah.
I assume it's a he. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably.
It's the internet. There are no girls.
Yeah, that's true. They're not allowed. So I wrote this whole thing, and I was like, I just want you to consider how would you feel if you posted a video and instead of commenting on its content, someone just criticized your appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, I'm not going to be responding to future criticisms of my appearance, but if you want to talk about the content of the video, I would love to hear what you had to say.
Yeah.
A few hours later, I got a one word response from him. Gay.
Whoa.
I was like,
oh my God.
Oh, that so encapsulates what I hate about YouTube, but it's just...
It's really lowbrow.
Oh God. Where does that come from though? Like, it's so disturbing to me. I know that we live in a bubble in New York, but like that there's this, the notion that there's this undercurrent of like racism, sexism, homophobia, just all this stuff that comes out in YouTube comments That freaks me out.
Yeah, I mean, when you have the power of being basically anonymous on the internet, you can say what you want. Have you ever written something bad in a forum about something? Because I used to write terribly trashy reviews on IMDb anonymously. That was my one thing. Other than that, I don't do it. But in the privacy of my own home, I'm saying horrible things about you all the time.
The hilarious thing, yeah. Well, especially with when I was on Rockaboom, my mum used to watch my videos all the time, and she used to read my comments, and she would like text me or call me up and say, "Ella, this guy wants to fap to you again." And, like,
oh God, you're all so fat. And
it's so funny. But like, if these kids knew that my mother was reading this comment, right. It's just so funny to me.
I used to get a lot of emails. I don't really make YouTube videos so much anymore. I've started trying to do them weekly again, but it was like a year gap between the last like videos I made between like this September and last year. But I used to get a lot of emails back when I was more popular from parents whose kids liked watching my videos, because my videos were never like offensive in any way. So like anyone could watch them, whatever. And they'd be telling me like, "I love watching your videos with my kid, but the comments that they see when I go on the page, you need to do something about that because I'm not going to watch your videos anymore unless you do." And I would see those emails and like completely appreciate where they were coming from, but I wouldn't do anything about it.
I remember, I won't detail exactly what it was because I don't want the repressed memories to come back, but you and I were in a particular video during our time at Rockaboom that involved a song.
Oh, it was a great song. And the person sung it the other day.
Do not get that in my head again. What? But the person who directed it had never directed a Rockaboom video before, and when he put it up on YouTube and he saw the comments that he was getting and his girlfriend saw it, his girlfriend was like, "What is this? Something needs to be done. Like, tell the internet, phone the police.
Yeah.
These people are saying terrible things." But I guess you just get used to it, which is kind of sad. What are some of the worst comments that you've gotten?
Oh my God. I don't know. I don't. A lot of stuff about like, "Oh, this bitch deserved to get raped" or something like that. A lot of stuff like that. Or like, "I want to stab you so much right now," but less articulate. I don't know.
I think one of my favorites.
I want to rape you. Sodomy is really popular on YouTube.
Yeah, what is with that? They're so into anal on the YouTube. But I remember for that aforementioned video, one of the ones that stuck in my mind, just because I appreciated the creativity of it, was, "I hope you die while having an abortion."
Wow.
That's always just stuck in my head.
You have to have an abortion to get to that point, though.
I know, which means I'd have to get pregnant.
Yeah.
So there are so many steps in that.
Right. That's pretty lengthy. Like, fine, maybe I'll never have an abortion.
Yeah, I sure showed you, anonymous YouTube commenter.
Yeah, I don't really keep track of them. I remember when we were at Rockaboom, and you would always have these really awesome responses to the comments on your videos. And I was like, wow, it's crazy she put so much effort into that. But I just never justified it on my own. And it kind of goes with my whole like online, I don't know if I have like a...
Yeah, what's your persona?
I don't have a persona. I have like a set of rules for myself.
Okay.
Like I never want to say anything too personal about myself ever. And I also don't want to ever care too much about what I put on the internet.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing with YouTube, when it changed and it became not necessarily people talking to their webcams and doing whatever they wanted that day, but became these shows that had formats and structures and were really repetitive, like TV, like the Philip DeFranco show. Structured completely. You know what you're getting every day that you come watch Phil. And I never wanted to do that. I just wanted to do whatever I wanted. And if I ever cared too much about it, then I knew I was doing something wrong.
I think that's a really good approach.
Just put it online anyway. It's the same with like Twitter and stuff now. I say whatever I'm thinking, whether it's about food or not. I don't care what you think.
That's a really good attitude to have, because I remember when I was writing, I did this comedy series called The Elegant Guide.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was writing the scripts for it, I feel like I censored myself because I knew I was going to be in these videos. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of preempting what people might say and the criticisms. That they might make, and so I kind of held back a bit.
Yeah.
And I remember when I started working at Rockaboom, I did that as well. Like I thought, well, I have to exhibit personality traits that are completely inoffensive.
Right.
Which is so boring and bland, but yeah. I was so frightened of the critical response and that being visible and public.
Yeah, I mean, at Rockaboom there was less leeway. I was sort of just doing like a character every day almost.
Yeah.
And that was something I had no experience with and like learned eventually. Like there were a couple examples, like getting to get drunk on a Rocket Boom episode was pretty fun.
That was pretty amazing. All loco.
And that's something I would totally do on my own channel. If there's something I want to say or something I think is mildly amusing or something I think is pretty, if I can like go get my webcam and stand in the woods or something, which is what I used to do. If I think it looks pretty, why not put it online?
That's cool philosophy.
Thanks, Ella.
Well, a lot of the vloggers, I guess, now, especially the female ones, tend to be actresses.
I don't know. Do they?
I guess maybe I'm just watching the wrong ones, but...
Some of them, like, definitely.
It seems like... And for hosting jobs as well. Like,
yeah.
It seems like it's all actresses who live in Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, everyone lives in LA now if you're on YouTube.
Yeah. What's with that?
Well, I mean, partly it's because there are the big, like, YouTube studios out there, like, Makers out there and Big Frame is out there. So it totally makes sense to be in a place where you can... work with a network of people who are doing the same thing you are and have those awesome resources that Maker has, like a studio and like, I don't know, a common space to hang out with other YouTubers and figure out what your collaboration is going to be. And that environment is really helpful for those people.
Yeah. I went on this trip to, oh God, I'm going to forget the name of the studio. I think it was Warner Brothers. I don't know. Who made Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
I don't know, but I remember this trip. I remember you posting a really funny picture of a hotel room.
Yeah, I stayed in a hotel room with a rhinestone-encrusted peephole.
Right. I loved that.
And they had, like, $18 water in the minibar.
Yeah.
But it was with a bunch of YouTubers.
That's what you can have if you make YouTube videos, guys.
Yeah, exactly. But I was there with a bunch of YouTubers and... I felt so out of place because I just didn't understand. It was like being with another species.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an age thing because I feel like I
don't know.
My internet experience, I feel like, is so different to yours.
Yeah.
But there's not, I mean, it's not like we're in a different generation.
No.
I'm a bit older than you, but I don't. Like, especially when they were walking around with their cameras and kind of filming each other. That was just like way too meta for me. I can't do that. Yeah.
When I see people, I mean, I love Shay Collins, Charles Trippy and like, and everyone in their families, but I can never imagine taking my webcam around, like I Justine or whatever, and filming myself as I was out on the street. I can never do that. Never.
And I don't have much shame.
I have a lot. But I have that much. I have to be, like, alone in the house to make a YouTube video.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, I mean, that's why hosting Rocket Boom was so difficult for me, to, like, perform in front of people. I'm not a performer at all. So I was, like, just incredibly embarrassed, and I was like, I want to move to New York. This is a great opportunity. I just have to pull through, and it ended up working and doing wonderful things for my self-confidence.
Yay!
Yeah.
So this talk of moving to New York, it brings up a question that we got on Twitter from Aaron Jackson, who lives in Australia.
Hi, Aaron.
Big ups. How's it going down there? Do you know you guys are one day ahead? How weird is that? But he wants to know what it's like to live in a different country, to be an expat, and what the difficulties are.
Yeah. I love living in another country. I mean, I've lived in North America for 5 years now. I moved to Canada when I was 17. With my parents because my dad got a job there and graduated high school, didn't want to leave Canada because I love it. And I went to college in Vancouver for a year and then I had to move back to England for like 4 months before I got to move to New York. And I always wanted to be over here. I watched so much Nickelodeon growing up that I felt like I belonged here. I am Lizzie McGuire, I am.
Hang on, when you first moved here, weren't you 20?
When I first moved to New York, I was 19.
Oh my God. Cause I remember talking to Leah D'Amelio and we were just like, do you realize that Molly can't drink legally?
Right. Yeah.
Like for another 2 years.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of cried about how old we were. But I mean, that's like, I started living alone when I was 17 cause my family moved to New York and I stayed behind in Sydney. So that was pretty young and that's, I've been independent for a while, but it seems like moving to New York at 19 is still a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And starting a whole new job and working with people who are like five, at least, years older than you.
I mean, that was weird. Moving to a new place wasn't scary for me because I'd done it twice over the past like 2 or 3 years. So I was like pretty used to going to a whole new place, making completely new friends. I think Being under 21 was difficult when I first moved here, mostly because I couldn't go to a lot of events because there would be a lot of tech events at bars and stuff. Mm. And it would either be like tricky to get me in and they'd have to smuggle me in with a group of bearded men or something. Or I just couldn't go. And I would spend a lot of time, you know, at home watching Netflix or like at the gym watching reality TV or something. It was sad. So, that was a challenge when I first moved here. And as for the like age difference with everybody I was working with and hanging out with, I mean, it was awkward. Like when people didn't honestly know I was 19 until I couldn't go to the bar or something and had to tell them. It was terrible. I remember like dating someone who was like 8 or 9 years older than me or something, and they didn't know how old I was, and they asked me to go out for a drink, and I was like, I can't go out for a drink.
I'm in the program.
And like, I don't know. It was a little embarrassing, honestly. Like I would try and just make out that I didn't.
I was always like the youngest of my group of friends or who I hung around with, and I tended to be like the youngest or among the youngest in whatever workplace I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving here, and especially working in internet stuff,
right,
you start to not become the youngest, and then some 19-year-old is in your office and you're like,
I'm asleep on the couch probably, and you're like,
I'm in my mid-20s and I feel like I'm 50. Like, this is weird.
I mean, that's gonna happen to me one day. Some 16-year-old's gonna come in as an intern and be like 10 times smarter than I am because they've been online their whole life. Whatever, I don't really care, as long as the people I'm surrounded by are creative and constructive and fun. Okay, so you're 16, that's fine.
I think I need to get over
Well, let's go bowling. We can go bowling. I love bowling.
Drink, like, orange juice.
Yeah, let's go for coffee.
So you're not on camera. I mean, apart from vlogging, you're not on camera in your job at the moment.
No, I'm not at the moment.
So is that weird?
It's really a relief. I think like being on camera every day when you're on a daily show, it sucks. Like 5 days it doesn't suck. It's really fun and great. But you can never have that down day when you just want to curl up in your chair and like not talk to anyone in your office. You can never like not go into work on a day when you have to be there for a shoot if you feel sick.
Mm-hmm.
That is rotten. Or like if you want to go on vacation, you have to work like twice as hard the week before to make sure everything's ready before you go away, so that you can have time off and you like stretch yourself out so you can relax. So like not being on camera now is liberating. I can like stay at home for an extra hour if I've got some work I want to finish here and not go into the office just in time. I cannot wear makeup.
Oh man.
That's so much fun.
That's what would really harsh my mellow about being on a daily show or like reading the news or something is that I don't want to have to think about what my hair looks like.
Right.
Like, I used to get in trouble at Rocket Boom all the time because my hair looked like crap. But, like, until recently, I never learned how to do my hair properly. But, yeah, I just, like, if I'm interviewing someone, I don't want to think about what my makeup looks like and if my face is shiny. And I know that's, like, part of the job and professionalism and stuff, but it's weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, and traditionally, like, you wouldn't handle those things if you were hosting on a TV show.
That's true.
So it is also, like, another skill set that you have to learn. Like I remember sitting with Ellie and Leo one day, and they were like, okay, so you have to wear more makeup. And I was like, but I'm wearing foundation, like, on my zits. And they're like, no, you need to wear foundation, like, on your whole face. And maybe some color would be good because you're pretty pale and, like, make your eyes pop and stuff. And they were like, there were a lot of debates about makeup and there, like how much was too much. I had to look natural because the show was pretty natural.
That's right.
Lots of discussions like that. I never got a hair comment, surprisingly, despite sometimes looking like, you know, I just popped out of the bush or something like that. I don't know.
So what do you, I mean, you're still really young. I know I keep bringing this up, but
I'm so young.
It's kind of disturbing to
me.
You've accomplished too much for someone so young.
Thanks, Ella.
What do you, I mean, lifelong.
Oh my god.
If you want to, I mean, I don't want to freak you out, but I mean, the types of jobs that you're doing right now probably didn't exist a few years ago.
Yeah.
So there's a certain kind of, that strikes a bit of fear into me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, will they exist in another 5 years?
Oh, totally.
And what's
totally
the future?
That's an awesome question. I think about that all the time when I'm looking at video bloggers and independent content producers in general, and like, what if YouTube changes? What if YouTube drops the ball and YouTube isn't around anymore, or YouTube isn't profitable anymore? What are you going to do? You have this, like, you know, generally an okay skill set, you can probably produce a good video, you know, like the technical things to an extent. But I mean, those skill sets are becoming so common too. Like, is that going to be an advantage to you if you want to stop doing this? What happens when you get old? Mm. What happens if you get pregnant? What happens if you're suddenly ugly? What happens if you get in an accident?
Yeah.
And you just physically can't do it anymore. I think about that all the time. And what are you going to have? Like, for a lot of people who didn't go to college, like me, or don't do anything else. I don't know. And I mean, that's why I'm sort of glad that I stopped doing it independently and found another way to be involved with the internet. And I think hosting was a great stepping stone for that. And I feel like now getting involved in, like, analytics and audience and consulting has been another step for me. And I feel like there's another step to that ladder. I don't know what it is yet. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I feel pretty confident there'll be something to do in 5 years.
I guess, I mean, it feels like a kind of 2011 internet issue. But I guess, I mean, yeah. If you're like a professional athlete, if you're a model, right. If you're, you know, there will come a day when you can't do what you used to do anymore, yeah. Because it's just, you're just not right for that job anymore.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe we should talk to some models and see what they're up to. My strategy when I was, I don't know what I do anymore. Who am I really? I guess I'm a writer.
You're a writer.
I'm a writer now.
You're also a personality. Like, people know who Ella Morton is for sure.
Some people. But when I was hosting, I thought like, well, I can do this for a bit longer while I'm still relatively attractive. And then when I reach my declining years, that's when I'll become a writer. And I even thought about becoming a psychologist.
Hmm.
I still might.
That's cool.
Who are some of the vloggers that you like these days?
Oh my God. Well, I love the Vlog Brothers, and I'll say that till I die. I'm just in love with John and Hank, and I have been for years. They're so smart, and they add so much to the YouTube community and like online content in general. Like the level of like education and awareness about education that they have. I'm just blown away all the time. Love them. Who else do I really like? I mean, I've become obsessed with beauty vloggers. We were talking about this earlier. I was searching for like my ideal beauty vlogger after I like finally found out what a haul video was. Ella, oh, would man. You like to say what a haul video is?
I don't, this might be another I'm too old thing, but a haul video is where you fire up your webcam and you pull out the shopping bag that you just got from Forever 21 or like Sephora, mm-hmm. and you go through everything that you bought and you talk about it.
And it's amazing.
To me, it's like everything that is wrong with America.
Yeah.
It's like rampant materialism. Mm-hmm. It's minutia. I don't understand it. Please tell me what's so great about it.
Like, that's part of it, right? It's so, like, it's, I mean, it's got the, like, train wreck appeal of, like, I can't believe this is actually happening. This is what people have been reduced to as entertainment. And then it's also got this fascination, like, the girl who's doing it or the person who's doing it, whatever, there are, like, kids who do Gushers reviews and stuff like that. The same kind of level of content, in my opinion. The people who do it are so fascinating themselves. Like, I love Ellen Blair. They are my favorite beauty vloggers. They're these two sisters who have a huge following and like millions of subscribers on all their channels, and they do like 17 minute videos of how to wear a plain t-shirt, to spice up a plain t-shirt, and I love them. I don't know.
Maybe it's like an older sister factor. Like, I feel like so much of of the internet and YouTube in probably, particular yeah. is about like the anxiety of not knowing how to do something.
Yeah.
And needing to find out in it a totally way that is. Doesn't display your ignorance.
Yeah, like looking at SEOs and stuff and thinking about what people search for on YouTube, if you look up how to, there's yeah. like more results for how to blank putting in a letter than like most things. Yeah, I mean, you can find anything on YouTube. My coworker was just looking up like plastic guns for a shoot or something, and was like looking up versions of the guns on YouTube, and there were like, there's a whole community of people who talk about fake guns on YouTube. There's a whole community of people who talk about samurai swords. You can find anything you want. And it's so cool. And then the beauty vloggers are just another sector of that. But to me, they're fascinating. I love them. Oh my God, this is my boyfriend. And we're going to play the boyfriend tag game. Say oh hi. God. And she like put makeup on him and everything. It was so great.
I'm going to write that off to a half generation.
I really want to make a beauty haul.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna get a Sephora.
Are you okay if I watch it and judge you?
Yeah. Make a parody. Make a response.
You know what? I wanted to do a whole video that was really disturbing. I'm sure it's been done. But I was going to be like, and this is my pregnancy test, and this is my six-pack of Corona.
Awesome. That would be awesome. Grace, actually, Daily Grace, did, she used to do whole videos like 2 years ago to make fun of them. She still does them once in a while as like her part of her parody.
I saw one where she went to Forever 21, yeah. And she's like, this is a dress. You think it only has three-quarter sleeves? That's purposeful. Psych.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she's great. And, like, I love the way she has fun with that. But she did one a couple of years ago where she does her bodega haul.
Oh, my God. She goes to the corner. See, it's been done. I'm, like, 3 years too late.
I know. I thought of that and was like, oh, okay. Grace has already done haul videos.
So I think we've come to the end of, I don't even know what we've been talking about. We've covered so many bases.
We rambled a lot. We ate some Indian food.
Yeah, I think it's had a psychological effect. But
I'm a little blurry-eyed.
Yeah. I hope you listeners have gotten an insight into Mimi Molly.
I hope so.
And where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm just Mimi Molly. You can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/MimiMolly. And I would love for you to come find me on Tumblr, mimimolly.tumblr.com.
Excellent. And you work at My Damn Channel.
I work at MyDamnChannel.com.
We do not work at Rockaboom anymore.
True story.
Because everyone keeps asking, but we don't.
That's the final word on that.
It was fun while it lasted. So this has been Ellipsis, the very first episode. Holy moly, I hope you liked it. If you have comments, questions, not criticisms, I don't want to hear them.
I'll hear them.
Anything, all right, if you have good stuff, send it to me.
Bad stuff, send it to me, Molly.
Ella at, what's my email address? Oh, yeah, Ella at ellamorton.net. Send bad stuff to Molly. And
however you want.
Yay. And I will see you on Twitter, Ella Morton. Or at the website for this, which is ellipsispodcast.com. All right. Smell you later.